So this is an interview with Dr. Roswell Boutwell in the conference room at the top of McArdle Library. I'm Molly Loss. Today is May 28th, 2013. So, I'd like to start by asking you to reflect on kind of the first question about whether college was always in your plans, and if we want to start with talking about your parents, that would be great.
Well, college always was in my plans because I fortunately grew up in a family where college was part of it. My father was a college professor, a chemistry professor at Beloit College. Both of them were well-educated, of course. My mother went to a country school out about a mile outside of Cottage Grove, and when she graduated from eighth grade, she was one of the rare young ladies that would take the train into Madison every day to go to Madison High School. And when she graduated from Madison High School, she went back, and fortunately that one-room schoolhouse that she went to needed a teacher for the next year, so she taught there for a year. And probably, she never told me, but I wouldn't be surprised if $200 or $300 was what a school teacher got then, because I'm aware that $600 or $800 was what they were getting in the Depression before World War II. So with that money, plus working at the university, she started in by riding, as she did for high school, the milk train into Madison every morning. And if you're familiar with that, the local farmers would take their milk cans to the railroad station, and then the trains would pick them up bright and early in the morning and take the milk cans in and deposit them at the creamery here in Madison. And that was the same around the country. So with that background, she started in the university and got a job her freshman year. And the picture I discovered in the, she never told me about this, I discovered in the Badger, the librarian for Ag Library probably subscribed to the Badger every year with his own money, and he had a complete set in the library, and I looked at that occasionally to find out about my background, and found my mother as a freshman in 2003 sitting at a desk in the library in the corridor of the biology department, directing students, assigning them to the laboratories that they were going to get for zoology in the first semester.
So she was a student at UW-Madison?
A student at UW-Madison, yeah, coming in by train every morning. And that was her first job as a freshman doing that. Fortunate to get that job.
Mm-hmm. And what year was it?
This was 2003 in the Badger.
1903,
maybe? Yeah, 1903. Okay. All right. So she worked in the zoology department as a student, but soon stopped going to school and was a secretary in the zoology department. The university was much, much different way back in those years before World War I. It was a small, unified university. Bardeen was dean of the medical school, and he heard about my mother and took her for his secretary. And there was only one secretary for a dean then. And after a couple of years, Van Hise got her up in Bascom Hall to be his secretary. Well, Van Hise, believe it or not, taught her to canoe took her out on my daughter canoeing, and she bought a canoe. And then there were a number of other university girls with canoes, and they had a little canoe club, something like the sports club at the Union now, I suppose, a precursor to it. One summer, she and another secretary took a trip down the Mississippi River by canoe and would stop. I know one hotel they stayed at a little village along the river, Alma, which still exists along the Mississippi River, and that's where they spent the night and then went on down again. And I'm not sure the total length of that, but she did tell me about that canoe trip. Well, my father started out as a chemistry major in Beloit College and came up here at the university. And there was no such thing as research assistants and so on in those days. There may have been a teaching assistant for laboratories, I suspect there was, but my father never was one of those. But he got jobs at Mankato State University in Minnesota, teaching in the summer, teaching chemistry. And the graduate program in chemistry at the university just went through the two semesters and not through summer school. So that was how he was free to teach then. So then when he was finishing up his PhD in chemistry, they kept him on as some sort of a preliminary professor teaching.
Where did he get his PhD?
He was teaching chemistry here in the chemistry department as a teaching assistant with a PhD, instructor, whatever they were ranked, he never told me. And over in biochemistry here, they had done an experiment with cows where they fed them all corn, a total diet of corn, another of wheat, and another of oats to see which would do the best. In those days, they only thought about the energy in the feed, in what we as people ate or animals. And so they were surprised when those on corn were much more healthy, had a better skin, a better hair coat, better eyes than the ones, and lived longer than the ones on the other two single grains. And that was when the biochemistry department did something they'd done more recently. For the first time, they went to the chemistry department for a recommendation for someone to come out and see what there was that appeared to be in the yellow pigment of the corn that made it better. And that's how vitamin A was discovered, but it was first discovered as carotene, the yellow form. And yet they found activity for the same biological effects in something that was white, and that was when they needed a chemist. And that was the first of three examples of where the biochemistry department here chose to bring a chemist over, and they brought Carl Paul Link, which many people have heard of, to solve the problem of the hemorrhaging cows that were fed spoiled sweet clover hay. And that's what led to the rat poison warfarin and the thing to prevent blood clots in humans eventually developed. But it took a chemist working with the biochemical materials to solve that problem.
Was that your father? Or
that was a Link.
Okay.
That was many years later, but it's an example of what a great department that is. Mm-hmm. And then later they got Frank Strong over there as a chemist from the chemistry department to solve the problem of the vitamin that was responsible for preventing this is where you can edit things out, where the nouns are gone in the middle of a sentence and you need a noun, it's gone.
A deficiency disease?
It was a vitamin deficiency disease. Beriberi.
Vitamin E?
No. Vitamin, one of the B vitamins.
Okay.
So it'll come to me what it was. And Frank Strong, ever since, was doing a lot of good things with respect to chemistry and biochemistry. So it was a forward-looking biochemistry department. Well, I got all this from my parents, of what a great place the University of Wisconsin was, and that this is the place to go to graduate school after going to Beloit College for undergraduate chemistry, that there just is no other place in the country that could compare, and there really wasn't. So all of those things I just came with by almost, you'd say, osmosis from my parents. But it wasn't just intellectual talk at the three meals a day around the table. It was wanting myself and my younger sister and brother to get out and play with other children, get so you could get good rapport with other people and get along with other people. And that message certainly came across after seeing how my father worked and what a nice disposition he had, and then he tried to inculcate that in all of us. And all of those things certainly helped very much. Well, the chemistry course in Beloit was excellent, and because my father encouraged me to join a fraternity, I joined the fraternity. They were a lot different than the wild fraternities on this campus, where grades, your intellectual education was emphasized by your fraternity, your intramural sports was emphasized. It was just a good environment with good people that all went on to do well in the world. And so all that also had a big impact on me when I think of what was important in college in the years following college. With respect to jobs, believe it or not, my first job was at 12 years old. There wasn't the child labor laws, and that was delivering papers. The boy that lived approximately across the street from us had 7 paper routes under his control, and he kept one when it opened up for me till I was 12 years old. For 2 or 3 months, he took an extra one of those 7 himself. And the first thing you had to do was get a nickel-plated badge about the size of a silver dollar to put on your shirt that the city of Beloit required of all people that went door to door to show that they weren't some crook that was out to rob them. So I delivered papers for a couple of years. But then when I was 9 years old, I was encouraged to go to the Y, because every Saturday morning there were 3 classes for the 9 to 10 year olds, the 11 to 12 and the 12 to 13, and they begin at 8 o'clock for an hour on the gym floor, and the second 8 hour down in the pool. And so I learned to swim and so on, and to get along with all these boys too. You sure that was emphasized, to mingle with people and get so you deal with all kinds of people, and I sure appreciated that. So then when I was finishing up in college, I had some other jobs. One year I, well, this one's my senior year, occurs to me first. I worked at Camp Eleanor, which was a camp for girls that was owned by someone around Milwaukee, and it catered to fairly well-off young girls. And beginning at Memorial Day for 2 weeks before Lake Geneva, this is over in Lake Geneva near that big telescope that looks at the stars. What was the name of that arboretum that over there? And so that, they cooked for the girls. The girls would take it for that 2 weeks. The Madison YWCA had arranged to have their girls go over. And they cooked with wood-burning old-fashioned stoves. I'd have to get up early in the morning to get the wood fire going. The milk came in 5 gallon milk cans that were just as heavy as almost all I could manage. There was no refrigeration. Things like that were kept in the basement that didn't have a concrete floor, and it was cool. It was very elementary, even for a rich person's summer camp. And so you took care of washing the dishes and all the peeling the potatoes and all those jobs. That was the sort of work I did as a senior in high school, and also carried over into my freshman year in college. You asked what kind of jobs you had. Jobs were difficult to get then, and as they always are, I guess. And so, because I went to summer camps myself along the way, I ended up at the, because I was a good swimmer from the Y and all that, as a tent leader in summer camps over near Milwaukee for a YMCA summer camp, and down to Rockford for when the Kiwanis or some club were sending the underprivileged charity boys to summer camp. And that was an eye-opener, being for 2 weeks that the charity boys were there. They were not well-adjusted. They'd run away from summer camp wanting to go home, and yet their homes weren't all that good. It was really an eye-opener.
Where were they from?
Rockford. Yeah, this is the Rockford Camp Rotary. It was the Rotary Club that paid for these first of the season. These also were first of the season when it's less desirable. The water's cold for swimming and so on. So in getting the boys motivated to make their beds and to do all these things was certainly an experience. How poorly adjusted these poor boys were. And one understands more now how you see the people, the young people from poor homes getting into all sorts of trouble. It's just, they just haven't had any background at all. So that was some of the jobs. The state YMCA camp, yeah, I had that job for a good part of one summer. I don't know, somebody left as a leader, and somehow through the Y I got in that job. And you'd have a tent that you'd get, that was no problem to get my boys to make their beds and all that and behave themselves. And so I was on the waterfront and also helped with hobbies. And so that was a good job. But I think one of my jobs only lasted a little while, also in my senior year in high school and my freshman year in college, was working in a greenhouse. And they had long tables like this table with sides on them where they put their plants in plastic containers nowadays. And those were filled with dirt. And every spring, every summer, they'd have to, every summer after all their spring plants were gone, after that season was over, they'd empty the old soil out of those boxes, and there'd be one box along one side of the greenhouse and an aisle down the middle and aisle down each side, the outside. So they'd put a plank across between two tables and a long plank leading to it, and you'd take a wheelbarrow and go up that plank, and boy, it took all my strength in high school when it was reloading, but take it up, fill it with dirt, take it down and dump it out behind the greenhouse. Then they'd have a pile of manure, a pile of nice black soil they get somewhere, and a pile of sand, and the greenhouse owner would tell me I was a pilot. So you'd pilot. And you got 25 cents an hour, 10 days, 6 days, 10-hour days at 60 hours a week, 25 cents an hour, and you multiply that out, 60 times 25, it comes out $15 a week. Mm-hmm. And that's what I earned. And there was one employee that didn't do that heavy work, but he'd work around there in the summer and all the year round. And I don't think he could have gotten much more than $25 a week in the Depression. That's when it's just hard to believe, the unemployment. But when you get that mixture of two shovels full of this and two shovels full of that into your wheelbarrow, shoveling it against a screen that would make all the lumps come out and be finally divided, and get that wheelbarrow up. And those were the hot days when the dust bowls were going on in Oklahoma and so on. It was hot. You look at the high temperature records in Madison in the newspaper, oftentimes in those 30s would be the hottest times, and under the glass, even with all the windows in the greenhouse open, boy, was it hot.
Yeah.
Oh, was it hot. So that was tough, tough work. But then, I guess between my junior year and senior year, I finally got what was generally regarded as a pretty good job that lasted all summer. Some of these other jobs were on again, off again, and you'd be busy around. My father would have me take the old rotten putty out of the windows on the outside of the house, put new putty in, and all this sort of house upkeep stuff. This job was selling bakery around the Delavan Lakes in the north side of Lake Delavan, and the Lauderdale Lakes was where my route went. The bakery was Yeager Bakery in Milwaukee. This was after my junior year in college. The truck would come over very early from Milwaukee with all the stuff in it. None of the bakery was wrapped except pies. These were Model A Ford trucks he drove. The bins that the bakery came in, the sweet rolls and all the other things, the loaves of bread and so on, donuts, they'd be like this table, long, slim trays. And you'd, all of us drivers would go up and get a tray, pull it out of the big tractor-trailer truck, and carry it on our shoulder and hands, that long tray, down the row, the plank out of the back of the truck. Someone would tell you what number truck, which was on the, you'd made your orders out the 2 days in advance, told you what truck to deliver this stuff to. Most of them were all year round drivers, but there'd be these few summer trucks. And you'd slide the drawer in and go and get some more. And this would be about 4 o'clock in the morning. Then you'd eat your breakfast and get out. You'd have to rent a room in Janesville. You were doing this out of Janesville, Wisconsin. And if you came back at the end of the day and the boss found you with bakery and very much bakery in your trays, you'd catch hell. It was really rough job. And so you'd get back in time for supper at 4, 5, 6 o'clock at night. Those were long days. $18 a week, that was a threshold, and if you ever broke that threshold, you'd get a percentage back for increased pay above $18. And I never did break that. Oh, that was tough work. And so when I got through college, there was no question about what school I'd come to, grad school here. Hart and Elvium were my advisors, and Hart and Elvium had grants, and that's how they could have graduate students doing the work that came that needed to be done experimentally to fulfill the request of the company that was providing the money for this grant. And the dairy industry in Wisconsin was providing money to find out something about the nutritive properties of milk products and of milk fat, butter. And then along came, and when I came to graduate school, all full of enthusiasm in September, think that there were going to be great opportunities ahead, even though this was 1939 and the Depression was as bad as any other year in 1939. Harry Weissman, that the Weissman Institute was named for, was there with a PhD. He couldn't get a job. He went on to get an MD then, and did exceptional work, and that's what led to his being honored with naming that place the Weissman Institute. Bob Burris was there with a PhD, and when the next year the professor retired, Bob Burris became an assistant professor, and he was an outstanding professor of biochemistry in plant biochemistry. I was assigned to Ed Schantz, and that was the milk project. And Ed finally got a job with a milk company, and then when the war came along, he was in the reserves, and he went to court Camp Dietrich, and he worked on Botox. What was that poison that was botulinum? Yeah, that was a war project. The most potent, the least small amount of material was the most potent of any poison, and it caused it attacked the nervous system, and so you were paralyzed, and it was very quick, and you die. You couldn't breathe, and you die of suffocation because the muscles that you breathed with, the nerves were just ruined. Well,
could I ask you? I'd like to know a little more about the milk project you worked on.
Well, that's coming then. Okay. As the war developed in 1939, it hadn't, but by 1942, 43, maybe even 1940, even though we weren't involved. This reminds me of something I forgot. Add this back when we were talking about my mother coming out of Cottage Grove. It was a strong German community, and the church was... they still spoke German. She grew up learning German and English. President Roosevelt got one member of his academy from students out of that country school that my mother went to that she knew to join his cabinet and was instrumental in the programs that Franklin Delano Roosevelt started during the Depression. Yeah, that's got that memory back when I started on the... before we were in the war, there was a shortage of meat and butter and sugar and a lot of things. And there was the question of how about taking skim milk and making butter, and then with that skim milk, homogenizing in a vegetable oil. Mm-hmm. And that would be much cheaper. And so we were deferred from going into the war, at least I was, because we were doing essential war work, showing that the vegetables replacing butter fat, the newborn rats that never had milk from their mothers didn't grow as well as the ones that got butter fat, even though they talk about the saturated fatty acids in butter nowadays, and that you shouldn't drink it, the full fat milk. That isn't true, because a lot of the fatty acids are as short as 4 carbon atoms, like butyric acid, and on up to 10 and 12 atoms, as well as the 18 carbon atoms that the bad saturated fats are characterized by. So, and the low-fat ones actually tend in tissue culture to promote differentiation. So their milk has a worse, butter fat has a worse reputation than it really should have. Anyhow, that's a sidetrack. So what happened then? What was some of the good and bad things? Some of the good things were that Carl Baumann was the young assistant professor, and he took care of Paul Lavick and Jim Miller, among other graduate students. He had 2 or 3 beginning graduate students, and Jim Miller was just an outstanding member, a graduate student, and then of McArdle's staff. And Carl Baumann and a young chemistry professor were good friends and liked to ski. And I didn't tell you about the fact that when I grew up, it was in Beloit, and at the end of our street, there was a right angle street, and that was the city limits of Beloit, except for the fact that they bought some ground right across the street, right off the end of our street, where they put a junior high school soon after to take care of the World War I bulge in students, when they had to take some students out of the elementary and out of the senior school to make a junior high school. And so that was just half a block up the street from us. And gosh, what a good place to play. And it was up on the high tableland where Beloit was, and then it went down into a bottomland where Turtle Creek, which was really a small river, flowed. And that's where we learned to swim, and we'd swim without swimsuits down there. There were railroad tracks that ran along the edge of this high ground, and a lot of times it was on the high ground, but in through behind that junior high school, it followed the creek for a ways. The creek was straightened out, and there was a big bend in the creek, and there was a gate through at the back of the schoolhouse. We'd get through there to that part of the creek, and that was where we did a lot of swimming, and that was a great place to grow up. And in that creek bottom, we just roamed the country wild as children, and that my parents encouraged, so that we loved nature and we became acquainted with it, and it was a good way to grow up. Well, what was the highlights of grad school and the bad parts? Well, the bad part was that I had a chemistry minor, and I was not used to what they did here, particularly in chemistry. It was all memory work. In college, my father taught differently, and a lot of other people did. Professor Peterson in biochemistry as a grad student taught this way. A lot of people at Beloit taught this way. They'd assign a chapter or a number of pages in a textbook and say, this is what we want you to learn out of that. And then the next day, maybe you'd be called upon to go to Blackboard and answer a few questions, and the rest of the class would participate. Or it'd just be discussion more often than not from the professor, and that'd be my father, mostly in chemistry, discussing what we learned. And you really learned it well that way, and learned to use it well. In many cases here, in biochem, some of the professors, and like Steenbach particularly in Elvium, they just lectured from their notes, and you just had to, they never used a textbook. They thought they knew it better than the people that wrote the textbooks. And then you had to regurgitate that to them in the mid-semester and end of the year semester exam. Well, that was the way the prelim, that was the way the minor exam was, and it'd be about 3-hour exam of just memorized organic chemistry, and geez, I failed that, and boy, the bottom fell out of my career. But it turned out to be a good thing, because then I changed to a pre-med course minor, which involved the physiology with the med students, which was a big 10-credit course with lots of laboratory, and that was good. And then med bacti was a good course. We were concerned about the effect of these diets and of the fat in milk on the bacteria in your intestinal tract, and how many of the B vitamins were made by those bacteria and put into solution and then absorbed into our bodies, and what was the influence of fat on all that. That was one of the things in our research. And so med bacti was a good thing. And then pharmacology, toxicology was a good thing. And I think they were just one credit, one semester courses, as I recall, in 1943-44 when I took them, somewhere in there. And there weren't drugs known like there are now, and so pharmacology wasn't a big deal. Toxicology was interesting, and of course there was a lot known about that, but not nearly as much as now. But those all made good backgrounds for biochemistry, and I was happy that bad luck turned out to be good.
Did you get the seeds of your later research from taking these classes?
Well, it helped research a lot.
Yeah.
And so with, I guess I didn't tell you the good part also with Bauman and the professor from chemistry. Bauman had a nice new pre-war Chevrolet, and we'd go skiing in the winter time. He'd take me out of the lab, and I'd go with him about 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock while it was still light enough to do it, and go out west of Madison where the Hoofers had a ski hill, and it was near the ski jump hill out there. And that was good fun. And Les Holt from chemistry was an assistant professor of chemistry. Actually, he coached the tennis team on the side as a young chemistry professor. He was coach of the, probably without pay, for the tennis team. So one time we went over to Holy Hill where they had a rope tow instead of here where you had to climb back up the hill, and once even up to Rib Mountain at Wausau with these people. So I was very fortunate to have that. That is a grad student. The home ec girls a bunch of other various classes around the ag school and the med school, maybe a physical therapist or something. Some of them had to have a course in biochemistry, and there was a grad student that would be responsible for the lab for that, and Frank Strong was often the teacher for it, and also Carl Baumann, these beginning young professors in the department. And Carl Baumann followed because we'd discuss it when we were driving in the car a little bit, and he was familiar with my research. He debated between Jim Miller and me to be the lab instructor for these home ec girls and various other students who were required to take a course in biochemistry that was a much simpler course than for the majors and the grad students. So Jim Miller ran out, won out in that, and that was certainly the right decision, because Jim is just a brilliant man and a strong detail man. He was a good lab teacher for those students. But Strong also helped me. Strong was on a National Science Foundation. Am I using the right term? I think so. A committee that was concerned with nutrition and biochemistry, and they had to have someone, as things developed, they had experience in cancer, and so Frank Strong got me that job. And gee, I got a lot of jobs with the American Cancer Society, with the NIH on committees, and these people like Strong and Baumann, who were a little older than me, would recommend me for these and got me started. And gee, that was a great experience too for a graduate student, mm-hmm. to be on these review committees for all these things. So I spent a lot of time on that.
So can I ask you more about this?
Please
this
do.
NSF Committee about Nutrition, what kind of work did it do?
The National
Science
Foundation, and it was a subcommittee job that I was involved, a subcommittee on nutrition and then on cancer. So it was concerned with products that would get into the general exposure to the general public and evaluate how it should be restricted, and was this something really to really be concerned about, because there was lots of probably not well-based concerns about things being carcinogenic.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, there are a lot of carcinogens that escaped control that should have been controlled, and that was what this committee, subcommittee that I was the subcommittee chairman of for carcinogenesis, mm-hmm. out of this nutrition committee.
About what years were this?
This would be when I was probably a postdoc in biochem, mm-hmm. and didn't have a job right away. And that's when it started. And then it also started, no, that with cancer, I beg your pardon, didn't start till after I got to McArdle. And how I got to McArdle was another, first place, all research programs were established by your professor then, and not by, as it is in history, we'll say, or something like that, where the student may have a word in making a selection and the professor evaluates it and maybe says, yes, go ahead. And one day I was working in the lab and Dr. Rush showed up, and I didn't know Dr. Rush. I didn't know him, who he was, never saw him or anything else, but I had heard of quite a bit of him from Jim Miller and others, because they, with Bauman, Bauman was an associate of Dr. Rush in his early days and worked in carcinogenesis and carried it over into biochemistry, and Jim Miller was working on the problem that he carried back to McArdle as a graduate student with Carl Bauman. So all of us were sort of interrelated, but I sure didn't know Dr. Rush. Well, he came over and said, how'd you like to come to work at McArdle? Well, I had finally gotten a job at Texas A&M and was offered a job maybe just a week or two before Carl came to be an assistant professor of biochemistry down at Texas A&M, where an earlier graduate of biochemistry here was maybe 25 years ago or something like that. And I just accepted that a week or two before Dr. Rush came, and boy, did I change in a hurry. Well, this was in days when there was only one secretary per department, still like it was way back before World War I. Maybe some departments might have had two or three. I guess biochem did, and they did have two or three. But there was only one telephone in a department. You just didn't telephone. And boy, did I write a letter back down and says, gee, I'm sorry, and I got this offer here. So I found out later that Potter and Jim Miller probably suggested my name to Dr. Rush, and Carl Bauman probably did too, and boy, was that lucky. You ask about what was the high points and the low points in my graduate career. The low point was failing a chemistry minor and coming in as a beginner and seeing people there as postdocs not working, getting to be a postdoc myself, and along with Lardy. Oh, it was a good class. I was in Hank Lardy, who really prospered here in biochem and the Enzyme Institute, and Paul Boyer, who went out to Stanford and had an excellent record there, was an editor of the annual reviews of biochemistry. Jim Miller, there are just a lot of real good people in that class of 1939 that came, and I was very fortunate to be part of it. But it sure was discouraging to join that group of having a PhD and not getting a job right away. So I was very fortunate when Dr. Rush came over, and I settled for coming over here to McArdle, and I think that's the end of the story till we get to research. Now, I think you're going to probably annotate an awful lot of what I said. I hope you can put together something that makes sense.
Yeah, I'll listen to it again, and then we can, if I have follow-up questions, we can talk about them at the next session.
Well, I tell you, I'm in the midst, in addition with the fact that it's just been a week since my wife fell on her head, and boy, that's still a big lump that sticks out and shows through her head, and her elbow's getting a little better, but she hurts a few places she didn't know she hurt. From the fall, you know, I guess you tighten your muscles and all sorts of things. So she's still suffering that. But also, I'm totally involved in our own personal things, too, quite a bit right now. So I hope it isn't for a week, maybe. There's another week before you see me again? Or do you want to push through this